Welcome back to the Pesky Report. This is episode 344 of the Pesky Report, brought to you by Beyond the Monster. My name is Derek. I am here with Jake and Hunter, as always, for this minor league show. And we have a lot to talk about, and we are going to start in the team that is probably the best team in all of the Red Sox organization, at least the best team to follow, the most fun team to follow, and that is the Portland Sea Dogs in AA. Obviously, a lot going on there, especially this week. They went 4-2 versus Reading, which is the Phillies AA affiliate. Let's not waste any time. I won't go to Jake first this week. We'll buck the trend a little bit because, Hunter, you're actually there, and you got to see some of these guys play, and that includes Marcelo Meyer, who you also got to have a conversation with.
Yep.
So just give us your thoughts on Meyer. Obviously, he had a good week, 9-for-24, homer, 5 RBIs. It's overall solid week for him. What were your thoughts about Meyer's play, and then obviously the conversation you had with him?
Yeah, well, first off, you mentioned that the Sea Dogs might be the best team in the Red Sox organization. I don't know if you guys saw, but I think it was like Baseball America or Prospectus. Someone put out a top 10 most talented minor league teams, and the Sea Dogs were number 2 behind the Orioles AAA team, which is, this was also when they had Jackson Holliday, so that was kind of an unfair team. But yeah, Marcelo Meyer, 7 games into the season, he's on a 7-game hitting streak, gotten hit in every game. He's gotten multiple hits in multiple games. He's demolished. It was 427 feet was his home run. It was majestic. It was gorgeous to watch. Something that's really stood out to me is how quickly the fan sentiment has kind of turned around on him last year with the injuries. And this is something I talked to him about last year. He was dealing with a lot of injuries. And when he got called up to AA, he struggled a little bit. And there was a lot of fans, a lot of media even, that were kind of like souring on him already. Like, oh man, this is supposed to be Heim's prize possession. Like this is what the Red Sox got, a guy that can't hit in AA. And what people didn't know at the time was he was dealing with a lot of injuries. And now he's healthy and he's crushing it. And now every time I post a video of Marcelo Meyer doing something, there's 40 people commenting like, oh, I gave up on I owe him an apology. And it's like, yeah, well, maybe we shouldn't judge a 20-year-old for struggling in AA for a couple weeks, injury or not. But just the swing is gorgeous. He looks smooth in the field. Him and a couple other people that we'll talk about later had the entirety of the Reading press box in shambles for basically all 4 days that I was there. People were a mess. The amount of times someone would hit a homer or something, and I would just, oh, again? Oh, my, oh, that, well, that one's out. It was ridiculous. But he's just, it's great to see him healthy again. He's proving why he was one of the top prospects, and he still is one of the top prospects in baseball, but he's someone that I think when those mid-year rankings come out, he'll be closer to top 5 than he is to 10. He's ridiculous. And I mean, as of right now, again, I know it's 7 games into the season. I just said you shouldn't judge someone off a couple games, but through 7 games, he's slashing .357, .387, .500. That's absurd. He's stolen 2 bases. He's doing everything. And as you mentioned, I did sit down with him. I had a chat, and just genuinely such a good guy, really easygoing. He kept bringing it back to his teammates. He mentioned friend of the show, CT, a couple times, talked about how big it was for him to get promoted with him, have a friend with him there. He talked about getting to see how Christopher Troy handles himself and how he does business. And he talked about his relationships with people like Nick York, Edinson Paulino. I mentioned Edinson Paulino and immediately like smile on his face. Paulie, he's just seems like someone that gets along with all his teammates. He talked about how this is the most fun he's ever had this year in baseball. So that Portland locker room, I think that's fantastic. They're building a winning culture. They're all getting along. I think it's, especially with the fact that they have so many of the top prospects, it's great to see that they all get along and have a good time and win baseball games. But I was a big fan of how, I don't want to say little he cared about, because he clearly cares about the fans, but how little he cared about the negativity that they were bringing at points last year when, as I've mentioned, how fans were writing him off. He said, like, that's not something he worries about because there's nothing he can do about it outside of play the game. He admitted that it was kind of his fault that he kept playing through the injury. He said he just kind of kept trying to see if he could push through it. And it actually got to the point where he could barely swing during batting practice or during BP, during practice, during anything. And he said it got to a point where both parties kind of knew, because again, he couldn't swing. And he said he finally wised up and told the coaches, like, hey, look, like, this is a legitimate issue. And they shut him down. And then he didn't swing again until the camp in Boston in January, in late January. So clearly something that was causing massive issues, which would explain why he was striking out so much. He wasn't swinging. He was flailing at the ball because that was all he could do. And it was leading to weak contact and bad swings that we never see from Marcelo Meyer. But just clear top of the order guy, brings everything to the table. I think, I know I already mentioned it, but I think he's someone that by mid-year is going to be considered one of the top five prospects in baseball. And Red Sox fans are already clamoring for him to come up with the injuries that the Red Sox have had at shortstop. But I think at that point it will be like a desperation cry for him to be in the majors. And at this point, I wouldn't put it past him to be able to produce. I don't want to put any pressure on him. I think that it would be wise for them to keep him in Double-A for a little bit, let him get his legs under him. Again, he really hasn't had a chance to play in Double-A healthy yet outside of the first few games of this year. And I also think it's great for him to be building chemistry with Roman Anthony, Kyle Teal, Nick York, Edinson Pol. Like, he's building chemistry with a lot of people that could be staples on a major league team in a couple of years. But I think that he's proving everyone, all the doubters wrong. He's proving all the positives that were said about him before the injury last year right. He's doing all the right things. And I think Red Sox fans are going to fall in love with him all over again.
Definitely. I do think the thing with Meyer too, the other thing to bring up with him is it seems, and obviously I know you just talked about him, but it does seem like he has a good head and shoulders, but you talk about how they're all getting along with each other. And I think when you look at Meyer and how everyone kind of labeled him as, you know, the, I guess, centerpiece, I guess you could say, of the minor leagues in some sense, of being labeled as the guy, it very well easily could put a toll on someone. And the fact that, you know, with the negativity last year, he's just like, it doesn't really bother me. I'm just going to do what I do on the field and let the play speak for itself. I think that's very good to have. And I think when you just look at the minor leagues as a whole, and we saw it kind of last year in High A, we talked about it with High A and Greenville, because they won the, was it the South Atlantic League Championship, if my memory serves me correctly, which somehow, because I have the worst memory ever, but
got it right, though.
but I got it right. But I think just, and I think now you look at this Double-A team and just the amount of talent they have, and it all starts, I think, with Meyer. I know a lot of people maybe put Roman Anthony ahead of him now. I'm still kind of a Meyer truther in that sense. But that's not to say that, like, the rest of the guys on the team aren't talented. And I think that kind of leads us to a really good spot with kind of the big three all being at this level, all being together. And the whole, I've said it in the past, it, you know, when you have all these guys coming up together, I feel like it makes them all better, because they're all around each other. They're all elite baseball players, and they're growing and learning together. And they can all kind of be, when a lot of these guys are maybe, you know, not living at home, when they're drafted out of high school, guys like Anthony and Meyer, who when they're drafted out of high school, maybe they haven't lived away from home a ton in their lives. And I know Kyle Teal was at college, but even then, it's different than being on the road in a minor league setting. And these guys all kind of become each other's support systems in a way. And now they grow close, and they have like these close relationships with each other. And to see that this is a team that is vibing together very well, and they're going to play good baseball, they're going to play winning baseball, I think just kind of bringing the whole thing together, I think just when you kind of look overall for the Red Sox, you have to feel excited about the future, especially with a guy like Meyer right at the forefront of it. And I think I feel like every time I hear someone talk to Marcelo Meyer and they say, oh, and then whatever they say, I feel like I always feel better about him after the fact. And I think the closer and closer he gets to the big leagues, like, let's not rush him, but the closer and closer he gets, just the more and more excited personally that I get, because everything seems like he's going to be a good baseball player. It seems like he has the mental side thing down on and off the field, on the field. You know, he's healthy now. That's the biggest thing. And so far, he's done well. So I think overall, that's the most important thing for Meyer and for the Red Sox organization as a whole.
Yeah, he's gotten off to the exact start that you would want him to get off to after how last year ended. Clearly, you know, no issues with the shoulder at this point, based off of the fact that he's driving the ball, that he's putting the ball in play, he's getting hits, he is looking really solid in the field. All of the conversations that I've ever, you know, interviews I've ever watched with him or read later, or even this goes back to when he was in high school, just how polished he is, how much of a leader it seems like he is, like, you know, probably, and I don't know, Hunter, you'd know better than me, like he seems like the type of guy that people gravitate towards, just because of his talent, the fact that he's bilingual, the fact that, like, there are, you know, he can relate to so many people in the clubhouse. The Red Sox are really lucky to have somebody with his talent and his and all of the different things that he can bring to the table. And now he's starting to really show it in Double A against better talent. And we saw it in stretches last year. I mean, I got to see him, you know, in New Hampshire last year, and we didn't know that anything was going on. He, you know, I can't remember what month that was. It was in the summer. It was obviously he was in Portland. It was after he got injured. He looked fine. Like he was driving the ball that night. He looked great at shortstop. Like he was playing, he was gutting through it at that point. And so I think that this is so positive to see this. And to have him be on a bit of a bigger stage and everybody getting to see him perform the way that he has. I will say that as far as the sort of clamoring about the Red Sox need help at shortstop, the only nit that I can pick so far, and it's a really small sample size, but one thing that I tend to look at, even with the small sample sizes, is, you know, strikeouts and walks. And so far on the season, he has 8 strikeouts to just 2 walks in 31 plate appearances. So that's like that's over a 25% clip on strikeout rate. That's not terrible, but it shows that there are things at the plate that he has to work on. I do think that there is a chance, and I'm not saying that I think this is definitely going to happen, but I think if you look at, and you know, different positions sort of, but like, so if you look at Sidon Rafaela last year, like he had played in Double A the year before, and he did really well. And it was a little bit of a surprise that he didn't go to Worcester to start the year. The Red Sox clearly wanted him to work on his swing decisions. And so he started in Portland and was great, and then went to Worcester and was really only there for like 6 weeks. And he got a hit in like almost every game that he was, but it was something ridiculous, right? It was like 40, like 41
either,
hits.
Yeah. It was either like 41 out of 43 or
something. Yeah. I think it was like 41 out of like 48 games he had a hit, which is just insane. And then, so he gets called up to the Red Sox to the major league club, like end of August. Right. So I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility for Marcelo Meyer this year. But he's got to hit all of the check marks, and he's got to do all of the good stuff at the plate, and, you know, face the same pitchers a couple times in the Eastern League. And, you know, we're talking months away from this even remotely being a possibility. And I'm only basing this on the fact that he obviously did get time in Portland last year too. So I'm not saying I definitely think that's going to happen, but it's at least within the realm of possibility. And, but you can't, you know, that the strikeout thing is the only nit that you can pick at this point with Meyer. And I actually had a question for you, Hunter, on the Redding roster, because we're going to start to talk here about the other guys. And yeah, it's like, was that Redding team good, or were they kind of not considered that good or whatever? Because like I felt like the Sea Dogs kind of took it to them, both hitting and pitching, like over the course of the week.
To put anyone on blast, and I guess I'm not, because I'm not going to say names, but a lot of the people in the press box don't seem impressed with that team. Yeah. There was a lot of like the amount of like fly, like pop flies, pop ups to the catcher, like the first baseman, that were dropped one was dropped in the field of play. I think it was Max Ferguson or Phillip Sykes, one of the two, got Mickey Gasper got one too. But the amount of just like, I think, no offense to the catcher, I think like three different times he threw his mask off, sprinted to the net, and then the ball dropped closer to the plate like three different times. They had like four guys hitting barely 100. Yeah, I don't think that team's exactly world beaters at the moment. But
I could use this opportunity to crap on Dave Dombrowski, but I'm not going.
I was about to say that. I'm like, oh, nice team building, Dave. Nice.
Yeah, no, one. I don't think that team's got a lot of a lot of big prospects on it.
But what that team does have is the biggest score bug in minor league baseball. I don't know if you guys saw that in the video clips and stuff. And 100, you were at the games, obviously.
Was it something like with an error?
Well, the score bug, if you just like go and watch the, like people commented about this, like if you watch like the video of Meyer hitting or Anthony hitting like videos, the score bug, like almost like it's from the center field camera view, and the score bug like comes up right up next to the face of the hitter like this. It's like here, like whatever. And it's just like, it was very distracting how big it was.
They kept apologizing to like the announcers about some error. I don't know if maybe that had something to do with it.
I don't think that was it. No, it wasn't. It was just unless the error was that the score bug was too big. But yeah, it was just kind of funny.
They do have the crazy hot dog vendor, and it's my favorite thing. It's why I love minor league baseball. It's a guy in an ostrich suit. So he's like running, but then it looks like he's standing on the ostrich, and he just whips hot dogs 100 miles an hour at people. And the crowd goes nuts. And like he'll throw, and then they'll land on the ground. I mean, they're in wrapping, but they'll land on the ground, and like you'll watch 30 people dive at it, and then someone's eating
because they have nothing else to get excited about.
Someone's right, eating a exactly. Hot dog. The team's the not good, so what are you going to do?
I no, love it though. I
minor league you can't top minor league baseball. It's the best.
I can just imagine being there, being like, oh no, this team sucks. Or the best player on their team is like the Phillies' 13th ranked prospect, who's probably like the 1,000th ranked prospect in all of baseball, and he's like 25 years old. And it's like, it's like, oh nice, this is fun.
But crazy hot dog vendor does autographs every day. So
wow,
go get an autograph.
Wow, there you go.
Be worth something someday.
Okay, so from hot dog vendors back to the Portland team. It's not just Marcelo Meyer, obviously. There's a ton of good players in featuring. I mean, Marcelo Meyer's in this group, but the quote-unquote big three of the Red Sox system, which everyone who lives near Portland, I am jealous of you because I want to go like every day, but I can't, which is unfortunate. But Roman Anthony, Kyle Teal obviously make the big three with Marcelo Meyer, and the three of them as a whole, I mean, all three of them had a good week. I mean, you look at the numbers and Roman Anthony, if you just look at the box, even just looking at the box score, like Roman Anthony, 6-for-20 with three doubles and two homers, right? He also stole two bases. Then you have Kyle Teal, who also went 6-for-16. He had a double and a homer, right? And so I think when you look at the grand scheme of things, like, and that's just like reading off the box score numbers. That's not like talking into what actually happens in games. Like, doesn't matter how you look at it. All three of them right now, although it's only a week, but in the week they've had, they've all started off very well.
Yeah. And you look at Anthony, like he has a 7.02 slugging percentage so far, which is just crazy. And it's, you know, hitting a couple home runs, you know, hitting the ball to the opposite field, like spraying the ball over the place. Similar to Meyer, the strikeouts are a little bit high to start the year, but like, you know, it's early. I feel like some of the stuff that he's been doing is, you know, all these guys was against like left-handed pitching too, which is good to see. And Anthony is, you know, there was there a play where he like crashed into the center field wall or something like that too?
And
he was, you know, he was okay, obviously, which is good.
He was involved in multiple scary plays this week, which was not good for my mental health, but
And that's the thing about, you know, you never know. You know, baseball plays, stuff happens. And then Teal, same thing, hitting his first homer of the year. He's been a little bit better in terms of the strikeout to walk. He has just five strikeouts to the three walks. He has fewer plate appearances than the other guys because he's a catcher. He's not going to play quite as much. But yeah, it's these guys, the marquee guys on the Sea Dogs are all doing exactly what you would want them to do. So it's a beautiful thing for sure.
Yeah. All three have averages over 300. They all have on base percentages over 380, and they all have slugging percentages over 500. That's I don't know if you can ask for anything more than that from your big three prospects.
I'll add real quickly too on the Kyle Teal side of things. I've had 5 strikeouts. Only 2 of them came this week. He had a 3 strikeout game his first game. Then that was 5 strikeouts. So yeah, he only had 2 strikeouts this week. So this week in the I think it was 4 games he played, he had just 2 strikeouts, 3 walks. So even with that, like you take that. I think too, it's just this big three. It's, you know, we're going to be talking about them a lot this year, but it's for good reason. And I think the Double A team, I mean, I don't want to say we're going to lead every show with them, but there's a chance that very well could happen because there's just so much talent on this team. And it feels like even if Meyer, Anthony and Teal don't have a good week, there's still other good players on this team that are exciting and deserve to be talked about. Heck, we haven't even talked about Nick York, right? We haven't even mentioned his name yet, and he's on that team as well. So I think overall, it's just like an extremely fun team. But yeah, I think the big three is definitely the like headliners of this team. And
yeah, and with the walks, I know we were just kind of crapping on the Reading Phillies for a minute there, but something that I noticed in the games I went to is they really weren't walking a lot of people. I think like 3 of the starters didn't walk anyone. So obviously you could argue that that's a little bit of both, but that could have a little something to do with the walks. Maybe some hitters weren't being as patient as they should be, but I think it was just a lot of the Reading guys were just attacking the zone, but the Sea Dogs were punishing them for it. So it's hard to complain about not drawing walks when they're hitting home runs every other at bat. But yeah, there's really nothing else you could ask from those big three outside of maybe drawing a couple more walks, but the numbers are there. The defense is there. Everything looked good this week.
Well, they weren't drawing walks because they were all getting hits.
Yeah.
You could also make that argument too. They're all getting hits. Outside of big three, we should probably talk about Nick York a little bit. Obviously he had another person with a good week. He went 7-22 with two doubles, a homer. He did have 6 strikeouts. So he only had 1 walk, but Nick York stole a base too. Let's not forget that. More stolen bases than I had, but that's fine. I'll continue that.
It was significant that he also, I think, got his first start in left field. And
yes,
that was the game that he hit the home run in. So it seems like that agrees with him. And I think that the added versatility for Nick York is going to have to be kind of what lifts him up at this point, I think, because overall I would say that he has gotten off to a bit of a slow start. His numbers weren't bad this week. I think they improved a little bit, but he's gonna have to really make the best of his opportunities considering who else is there.
I will say though, if you're Nick York and you're looking at the lineup, you're looking at it with like big wide open eyes. You're like, ooh, a lot of opportunities for me to do some damage. I think that's one way he could be looking at this in terms of, you know, I think there's a couple different ways. You could either look at it and go, oh my gosh, all these other guys are here and they're good and they might overshadow me. Or you can look at it and go, guess what? I'm going to have a lot of good opportunities while they're all here and while I'm here. Let's make the most of it, right? And I think I'm assuming he's probably much more towards the second one. He also seems like another person with a good head on his shoulders. But I think the starting in left field thing was interesting as well. Not that we didn't necessarily expect it at some point, but I think it's interesting in terms of his long-term future because there's been Red Sox fans having discussions of like, do they trade Nick York? What do they do with them? You know, can he be the everyday second baseman? Because now you have Vaughn Grissom and Trevor Story still in the big leagues and Marcelo Myers now in Double A with them. And it's like, what's the long-term future for Nick York? I think if he can handle left field, having that extra versatility doesn't help. Also doesn't help if he does end up coming up in trade talks down the road, which is something we don't like to necessarily talk about because we don't want to see any of these guys traded. We like to, you know, keep them all, but it is a conversation that, you know, maybe around the trade deadline this year, if the Red Sox are good or in the offseason or whenever it may be, there may be conversations of what do you do with Nick York, and having this extra versatility, if he can handle left field, I think only makes him more valuable, whether it's to the Red Sox or even to another team, as much as we don't would, as much as we wouldn't like to see that happen.
Yeah, and while we're on the subject, and we're just kind of talking about, I think the way we're going to do this is we're just going to kind of, Derek and I are just going to talk about random people from Portland, and then we're going to turn it to Hunter, and he's going to give us like the emptying the notebook kind of on his time with Redding. But I'm going to mention somebody else in the same vein, which is Edinson Paulino, who had a really great series. And he hit 3 home runs in 2 days, I think, right? And, he is like really pimps those home runs too, which is great. But yeah, he's, you know, 292, 346, 708, making a name for himself really in Portland is a huge deal, because for the same reason that you're talking about, Derek, which is that I do think that Edinson Paulino, it's hard to see where he fits in long-term with the Red Sox, but if he is hitting well and doing all of these really good things at AA, because we've seen him put up really good numbers previously at basically all other levels. Now he's at AA and he's doing it. That definitely makes him somebody that if the Red Sox want to try to make a deal for a starting pitcher or whatever, suddenly like Edinson Paulino is like a legitimate name because he's doing it at AA. But again, it's early. He's got to keep doing it. He's got to keep doing it over the course of like a full season. But suddenly he becomes a really interesting guy. And so it was great. But in the meantime, it's really fun to watch him on this great team with all these other great prospects, kind of making a name for himself and even like outperforming some of these guys in some respects.
Yeah. Well, the thing with Paulino is I know there are a lot of people on the Paulino breakout year train last year. I was on it, and you know, it wasn't necessarily a bad year last year, but he had his struggles throughout the year. I still haven't given up hope necessarily on the Paulino breakout year. And we always talk about prospect development not being, or in player development in general, not being linear, because it's not. Mm-hmm. And I think Paulino potentially could be one of those guys where it wouldn't shock me if he had a breakout year. It just is at this point for him where it's like, where to me, it's like he very well feels like a guy who can play all over the place, have very decent, like at least decent bat, and can be very valuable for a team. Heck, even if he's just like, I don't want to make this comparison, but even if he ends up being like a Brock Holt type, and I don't like making the comparison because Brock Holt's beloved by Red Sox fans. Yeah. I think Red Sox fans have him in much higher regard than other fan bases do. But in terms of even if he ends up just being a utility player, but is good enough to play all over the place and play every day, you know, that's valuable. That's valuable to have. No one's asking Edinson Paulino to be the best player on the Red Sox 3 or 4 years down the road. Yeah. But I think when you look at him, he's definitely one of those guys that can be a valuable piece to an MLB team down the road. And another guy who I think could potentially be valuable should things pan out for him. I do want to talk about Matthew Lugo, because this is a guy who, you know, going into last year, you look at him and he was peaked at number 12 on the Sox prospects top 60. And, you know, his nephew of Carlos Beltran, and, you know, and he was kind of gaining some traction, had a good year in Greenville. And it was like, okay, Matthew Lugo's coming. And then he had his struggles last year. They moved him to third base. And then he kind of got moved to left field, was playing some left field as well. But that's another guy who, you know, if he can play third base, maybe a little bit of outfield too, give him a little bit of versatility. You know, that's a guy where I know he had a decent week, 3 for 12, but 2 homers in there. He only struck out 4 times, so not terrible at all. And I think when you look at Matthew Lugo, he had that really good year in 2022. And then, yeah, last year was rough. But like that goes back to the saying of like prospect development not being linear. Because Matthew Lugo, I mean, I said with Paulino, I'll say it with Lugo, like, wouldn't shock me if he had a bounce back year. But just it wouldn't. And you start looking at that, and then that's another guy you add to the picture. And I was talking with Jordan, I think it was yesterday or Sunday when – so not yesterday when you listened to this, but so I was talking to Jordan Sunday because we were both at the Red Sox game, and we were talking about York and basically said, like, it might get to the point where you have to, you know, where York comes up in trade discussions. And I pretty much said it's not necessarily – I think it was Jordan I was talking to. It might have been someone else. I don't remember. But I basically said it's not necessarily whether you can trade away York. It's does someone else make it reasonable to trade York, I guess. And the way of my thinking is, you know, if Paulino – has a good year and makes himself valuable, if Matthew Lugo maybe bounces back and brings value back to his name, a guy like a Nick York, who I don't necessarily want to trade, but you might need to, right? He becomes a little bit more expendable because you have other guys excelling. And I think, I'm not saying they should trade Nick York. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying, though, is the more guys you have doing well, the more good problems it creates. And like I said, with Matthew Lugo, he obviously did not have a great year last year. But if he can bounce back, not be some top prospect, but just be solid and kind of bring value back to his name and have a good year in Double A, I think it goes a long way for him, obviously, but also for the Red Sox organization. Matthew Lugo is still 22 years old. He's not this like 25-year-old guy who's in Double A. He's still 22, right? And he could still very well come back, have a good year this year, and then the whole Matthew Lugo, he's not even on the Sox prospects top 60 right now, which, like I said, it was a rough year for him last year. But I still have some faith in him in the fact that, like, I don't think he was as bad as he showed last year. I think he's better than that. How good is he? I'm not sure, but I think that there's something to be said for the whole saying of prospect development isn't linear. Don't give up on a guy just because of one bad year. Now, if a guy strings 2-3 bad years together, then maybe it's something. But yeah, I mean, you can have down year. Rafael Devers technically had a down year last year. It was still a really good year, but based on his caliber, it was a down year. That doesn't mean he's now that player for the next 10 years, right? I think with Matthew Lugo, just because he has a down year doesn't mean he's that down year. I think he can bounce back. So I think that should be mentioned because we try and talk about the guys who have good, who are playing good. We don't necessarily want to dwell on the negatives, which is fair because that's not fun. But I think it's also, it would be fun to see Matthew Lugo get back to his best. It's also
yeah.
That.
Yeah. And he actually was in a pretty scary incident in Friday's game. I was saying how Roman Anthony was involved in a couple scary incidents. Him and Roman Anthony collided. Matthew Lugo, I thought, went for a diving catch, but apparently he was on the ground for a couple minutes, completely unmoving. And then like the team was huddled around him. The trainers came out. He ended up walking off kind of on his own power. Like the trainers were with him, but he was walking. And shout out the friend of the show, Hunter Dobbins. After the game, he told me, he said, Lugo's fine. Apparently he collided like his leg with Roman Anthony, apparently, on the dive, and just like completely lost feeling in it for a couple, not like scary lost feeling, but like, just like it was like both his legs fell asleep basically. And he just couldn't stand up. Like apparently it wasn't really nearly as scary as it looked for the people on the field. Like they weren't nearly as worried as people in the booth were. But he is someone that I think at the beginning of the year, there was a little fear of him kind of getting buried on the depth chart. Like, where's he going to play? So I was actually pleasantly surprised with how much playing time he got this week, especially with he missed a game because of the injury or because of the incident. But I mean, he still appeared in a few games. And I think that so far the Sea Dogs have done a really good job of getting everyone playing time. And as for Edinson Paulino, my big gripe with, not with him, but my big gripe around him right now is minor league baseball needs to update his weight. There is no way in hell this guy is 155 pounds. He is yoked. He is massive. Like, this guy looks like he got locked in a weight room for 2 months and said, screw it, I'm just going to lift literally every second of the day. He is massive. He's someone that we've talked about in the past as being someone with like sneaky pop. Oh, he can get you 15 homers. Like, he's going to get you a couple homers and he can hit it. If this added muscle doesn't hurt him in any way and just means he's going to hit a couple more homers and hit them even further, that could be fantastic. But he looks like he's in phenomenal shape. So we've already seen 3 homers from him. I'm excited to see what else he can do. And with Nick York, my big thing was I was a little upset. I saw him in left for like 1.5 games because he moved to left when Matthew Lugo came out of the game. Didn't really get any like challenging fly balls. I was really hoping I'd get to see like a tough liner or something get hit his way. But it was usually when someone goes to a new position, there's always that joke that like, oh, the baseball is going to find him. it seemed like Redding was going out of their way to keep the ball away from Nick York. And I was a little upset about that because I thought, oh, this will be a good test for him to get a little something out there. But it didn't happen. And then I was really impressed with Max Ferguson this week. He is the person that actually came in for Matthew Lugo. So when Matthew Lugo got hurt, Nick York was playing second. He moved to left. Max Ferguson came in. I think it was in his first at-bat after coming in. He smoked a two-run homer, and he's not a guy known for power. He had a couple hits this week. He stole a couple bases, or he had a couple hits and a couple walks. He stole a couple bases. He's already up to five steals this year in five attempts. And he's probably going to hit at the bottom of the lineup because this lineup's stupid. I mean, there were games where like Nick York and Edinson Paulino were batting like sixth. Like this lineup isn't real. So he's in a spot of like, it's something you'll hear every once in a while of like, oh, the second leadoff man, the nine hitter, like he gets on base for the top of the order. If he can get on base at a semi-decent clip, he's someone that even before he got to the Red Sox back when he was in the Padres system, not a great batting average guy, but he was getting on base pretty well. And then he would steal a ton of bases. And he's kind of kept that trend going. If he can get that batting average up a little bit and have like a high 350s range on base percentage and hit 250, which is he's hitting 250 right now, and just steal a bunch of bases. And all of a sudden, you know, Roman Anthony, who is the most unfair leadoff hitter of all time in the minor leagues, if Roman Anthony can come up with a guy already on second or third, or Marcelo Meyer comes up with now, you know, two guys on, he can play such an important piece in the development of the top guys, and he can make a name for himself while doing it. So that's fun. And then Nick Decker is someone I just want to give a quick shout out to because not had the best minor league career so far. He had a good year a couple years ago, but kind of injuries, and then he just really struggled for a couple years. And then he had a couple big moments in high A last year. But I posted a video of him yesterday or 2 days ago because he was playing in his first game of the season. He got activated. He was on the IL. He got activated after Tyler McDonough got promoted to AAA because Bobby Dalbec got sent back up to the majors. It was a trickle-down effect. But and in his first game, he hit a two-run – no, I think a three-run homer. I think it was a three-run homer. And immediately I had like three different people like laughing, like, oh, the hell is this guy still doing in the minor leagues? Like, oh, he's been in the system for 5 years and why is he only in double A? Injuries, not everyone becomes a superstar right away. And he's only like 23 or 24. Like, it's not like this is like some 28-year-old guy who's, and even if it was, who cares? He's still playing professional baseball. But I just think it's ridiculous that like a guy comes out and hits a homer and people's first reaction when a guy's now officially 1-for-1 with a homer on the year and your first reaction is like laughing at him. I think that that's ridiculous. But he's now played in 2 games, I think, 2-for-5 with a walk and a homer, and he's stolen a base. And he's someone that I've talked about before in the past. I think he still has, there's still something there in the tank. I'm not trying to sit here and claim he's ever going to be some big name prospect or anything, but left-handed swing, decent speed, has always been a guy that gets on base even when the batting average wasn't great. He was good at drawing walks, and he's shown that he can hit a ball a mile. I think that he's someone that can kind of just be a sneaky, fun, bottom-of-the-order bat for them, and again, kind of in the Max Ferguson sense, if he can get on base, steal a couple bases, hit some home runs, and set the table for those guys at the top of the order, I think he's going to help make them better, and I think he's going to put himself in a better light. And then on the pitching side, I just want to bring up two people, really. Kind of three people. I did get to see Felix Cepeda play this week. I was very excited about that. I'm a big Felix Cepeda guy. He came in with a guy on. There might have been two guys on, actually. Yeah, I think it was like the winning run. The tying run was on second, and the winning run was on first with one out in the ninth. And he went strike out and pop out. He looked phenomenal. I was happy to see him. But then Zach Penrod was absurd in his first start. 5 shutout innings, 2 hits, no walks, 8 strikeouts. the Reading lineup looked baffled. They had no idea what to do with him. It's, I've said it 1,000 times. I'll say it again. Blows my mind that this guy was in independent ball last year. Like, it just doesn't make sense that someone that is dominated high A, it's one start, but he made an entire baseball team look stupid for a day in double A. Like, I don't get what people were waiting for. Incredible find by Heim. I know people have very mixed feelings about the guy, but I think that just seems like it's, I would not be shocked if Penrod was in triple A by like the end of May. I think that if he gets, you know, 4 or 5 more starts and just keeps dominating, he's 27 years old. It's not like, and I don't think they're going to try to be super patient with him. If he just keeps dominating, I don't expect him to go out there and throw 5 shutout innings every week, but he's kind of been ridiculous ever since he got into the Red Sox organization. And I don't think they'll see a point in keeping him in double A if we get to June 1st and he has a 1 ERA and a ridiculous strikeout to walk ratio. So he's just a fun name that could end up being someone that helps the Red Sox at the end of this year, even. That really wouldn't surprise me that much, pending on injuries, where they're at in the playoff race, whatever's going on. And then Ryan Zephyrjohn has looked phenomenal so far this year. I saw him once this week. He threw 2 shutout innings. They might have been 2 perfect innings. I think they were. I think it was 2 perfect innings. But he's up to 4 shutout innings now. He's only given up 2 hits, no walks, 5 strikeouts. He even has a save. He's been phenomenal. And someone that Christopher Troy, friend of the show, Christopher Troy, has talked about him in the past, saying how he actually has the best fastball of the group. When someone, I forget who asked him, but someone said, like, because Sandlin had hit 100, and then there was talks of like Luis Guerrero could hit 100 and Christopher Troy could hit 100. And somebody asked him, like, what, like, was that like a competition for you guys? Like, and he said, like, Zephyrjohn's the guy that has the fastball. So he's someone to keep an eye on, because he's had stretches in the past of being ridiculous. And as for all the other pitchers, no one really had great outings, but I did hear from multiple different people that their schedules were just completely thrown off because they had 2 snow days. Then they had a 10-hour bus ride. And then they get here and a game's rained out. And then when they had the doubleheader, I'm 99% sure it was snowing when I was walking to my car. So like their schedules were thrown off. They didn't get to do their normal like workout programs. A lot of them didn't even get to throw like their bullpen days. So I think a lot of these guys, like, it's their first start of the year and they're already like in this weird rusty, like Hunter Dobbin said, like he threw a game right near the end of spring training, like a backfield game, and he hadn't thrown a game since then. Like it had been like 12 days since he, like, these guys are like, pitchers especially are creatures of habit. And all of a sudden you have them in a box for 10 days, not getting to do their normal routine. So there's really, to me, there's nothing to worry about when it comes to Coffee, when it comes to Isaac Coffee, Hunter Dobbins, Wickelman Gonzalez, Angel Bastardo's been CT has been fine, but like his fastball isn't hitting the usual 97. Like, I'm not worried about these guys. They're in a weird schedule, and give them, you know, a month to get ramped up. And like, this is, they're in the minor leagues. It's not, there's not that added pressure of like, you have to help the major league team win right now. Let them get their legs under them and let's worry about it then.
Definitely. Spent what, we're about to hit the 45-minute mark and we've still done all double A.
Shorter than we thought it would be.
Yes. Yeah. Actually it is. I was starting to think, I'm like, are we gonna hit the hour mark? Oh, by the time we got to the half hour mark, but kept it to 45. That's a nice one. Next up though, we are gonna move away from double A because we wanna touch on the other levels. We're gonna move to low A and to Salem. They had a good week as well. They went 5-1. Against Delmarva, which is the Orioles' low-A team. So suck it, Baltimore, especially after what happened last week. Yeah. But no, they had there were some good performances for Salem. And we'll kind of focus on the Garcia brothers, Yoan Fran Garcia and Justinxon Garcia. And yes, I learned how to say it.
There
you go. Congrats to me.
Congrats to you.
Yoan Fran went 5-for-15 this week, had a double, two homers, three RBIs, also three walks to the five strikeouts. And Justinxon went 8-for-22 with two doubles, two homers. He had six RBIs. He did have six strikeouts with two walks. He also, though, stole five bases this week. So pretty big base stealing week. I think Miguel Blaise also had five stolen bases.
Yeah.
Andy Lugo had four stolen bases. A lot of stolen bases in Salem this week, but we'll start with the Garcia brothers, and we'll bring back the tradition here. For low A, I'll go to Jake first. Thoughts on the Garcia brothers and their performance this week?
It's one of the more fun stories in the Red Sox minor leagues right now is the fact that you have two brothers at the same level that are not only at the same level, but they're both doing really well, and they both are very interesting and very different prospects where, you know, Justinxon is this like, you know, this like multi-tool outfielder type that is, has, you know, the ability to hit two homers in a week, but also steal five bases. So, very exciting tool set on a guy like that. And we'll see, you know, if he ends up, you know, getting more attention now because of the fact that he's, you know, they're, you know, he's in Salem and they're, you know, he's doing this. And then Yoan Fran is very different. He is a large man. He hits the ball very far, and he's also growing as a catcher. He's getting better, you know, the more reps that he gets back there. I think that he is a, he's in a system that has a lot of interesting catching prospects. The more that exposure that he gets there, the better off he will be, and the better off the Red Sox will be to have more options there. So it's one of the cooler stories right now. I guess I'll just, you know, mention in addition for the other position players, like Nathaniel Yuten had a great week. He went 8-for-22, and yeah, you know, Miguel Blaise like overall had a relatively quiet week, but he did have the one thing, the video that Hunter posted of him absolutely destroying a baseball for a triple that, you know, was a gapper, and that was just like, I would still love to know what the exit velocity was on that. It's hard to, sometimes it depends on the game. And one good thing is that there is more of that data available now for low A and high A and double A games on StatCast, but it is hit or miss as to what parks have it. And it was not, they didn't have it. I think they were in Delmarva this week. So they didn't have it there. So not a shock that the Orioles wouldn't spend the money on something like that, but that's, you know, and we'll see what happens with the new owner there, who is actually has money and seems willing to spend it. So, but I would say that, the Garcia brothers, it's a fun story to follow, and we'll be continuing to follow it. And it's been a rare occurrence, to have something like this happen. And we saw it, you know, if you watch the Red Sox today, it's like the Guardians, they have the Naylor brothers. So that's kind of cool. And maybe the Garcia brothers will be that for the Red Sox someday.
Yeah. Yeah, something fun that happened last year was when Yoan Fran Garcia first got called up to single A, Justinxon was already there. And in one of the first games that he was there, he got a single to drive in Justinxon. And now this year, Justinxon's batting behind Yoan Fran more. So earlier last week, Justinxon hit a home run with Yoan Fran on base. So now they've both driven each other in. And then earlier this week, they both hit a homer in the same game, which, I mean, like you said, it's hard to, it's such a cool story. We're getting all these different, you know, Garcia brothers doing things that I can't imagine they'll steal a base in the same game. That's kind of up to Yoan Fran, but we're getting a lot of different, you know, defensive highlights from each. Justinxon makes great. He's made a bunch of really nice plays in the outfield. Yoan Fran throws people out. So yeah, they're just an exciting duo, and it's nice to see Justinxon getting a little bit more of a spotlight, and it might just be because of his younger brother. I mean, obviously he's playing phenomenally, but I think it definitely helps that his younger brother's there, because it adds to that narrative. But he's proving himself. I mean, he's slashing 333, 394, 633 on the year. And like you said, 5 stolen bases this week, but he's 6 for 6 on the season. So, I mean, he's been phenomenal. My big thing with Miguel Blase is actually the walks. Last year in 142 plate appearances, he had 10 walks. This year in 38 plate appearances, he already has 7. To me, that's like that's bigger than any of the other numbers he's putting up. Is he's clearly, that's something that someone told him to work on, or he told himself to work on, because all the positives we could say about Miguel Blase last year, that was a very clear issue, was that he wasn't getting on base unless he was hitting the ball. And with his ridiculous speed, if he can just get on base, he causes so many issues for everyone. And Andy Lugo's immediately becoming one of my favorite prospects to watch. Just didn't even play last year. If you look at his MILB thing, it was 2022 was the last time he played in like a DSL or anything. And he's been phenomenal. Just getting on base, getting hits. I think he has a hit in all but one game this year, stealing bases. He's doing everything. He's been fun to watch. Another name to pay attention to when you're already trying to cover 35 different people, and then Andy Lugo comes out of nowhere. So definitely not complaining.
No, definitely not. And I think too, just to go back to the Garcia brothers for a second, I think it's kind of, I don't know what the right word to be describe it, but I guess I'll say it's everyone's dream. I guess if you have a brother, it's probably your dream to be able to, and especially if you're both baseball players growing up, it's probably your dream to be able to play together. And obviously, like you said, we're kind of seeing it with the Naylor brothers with Cleveland right now, but seeing it, you know, in low A right now with Johan Fran and Justinson, and then maybe it'll be in high A together at some point. Heck, maybe even they see triple A big leagues together. You never know. But it's always a fun thing to really follow along. And I think too, it also helps. I mean, as much as we love like Miguel Blase and whatnot, there isn't a ton of like crazy, this isn't Portland is basically what I'm trying to say. There's not, you know, the 5, 6, 7 top prospects on this team. There's, you know, yes, you have Miguel Blase, you have Johan Fran, but there's not like a ton of like, there's not really anyone else that you could go to like Red Sox Twitter and be like, you know, oh, this guy's in Salem in terms of position players, at least. Maybe Antonio Anderson, because they drafted him last year. But outside of that, there's not like a ton of like the big names, I guess, that Red Sox fans that don't pay attention to the minor leagues would be able to recognize. So having the two of them, I think with the whole being brothers, I think it only helps the both of them out. Obviously, in terms of the stolen base thing, I think if Johan Fran ever steals the base, they need to have Justinson. As soon as he gets on base, he should run automatically. Just go. Don't care. Or if he's on the bench, let him pinch run or something. I don't know. But that should happen. If Johan Fran ever steals a base, number one goal should be get Justinson on base to steal a base. But I think that having the two of them, it does create more tension for the team, which is good too, because guys like Andy Lugo, who had a good week, you know, that might get recognized because people are starting to look at them. And then on the pitching side, there are a lot of good pitching performances this week. Our ear licker, Austin Ehrlicher, he had a good game out of the bullpen. 7 strikeouts, no walks. He did give up 2 unearned runs, but it was over 3 innings. I did like the 3 innings, 7 strikeouts, no walks. I thought that was nice. Also, too, we need to make shirts that says I'm an ear licker and just – but spell it like Ehrlicher and just.
So Derek's not allowed within a certain distance of any schools. I am not going to wear a t-shirt that says I'm an Ehrlicher. What the fuck is wrong with you, Derek?
No, but it's spelled Ehrlicher. It's spelled like his last name.
Okay, you probably should have specified that.
I was trying to say that.
Jesus Christ. What is happening? I missed the show for 1 week, and this is what this place turns into. My God,
it's chaos, Jake. I don't know.
Yeah, you missed our tag team show. You missed our tag team effort last week. Now I guess it's a triple threat, maybe. I don't know, or whatever, or a trios, Hunter. I think
there you
trios
go. There you go.
Better. But no. ERC had a nice game, although I don't. Is he going by Elmer Rodriguez Cruz? Just Elmer Rodriguez? I know they changed on Sox Prospects.
So. Seems like he's. Yeah, I think he's just Elmer Rodriguez at this point. It's kind of interesting, but
yeah. I'm still calling him ERC.
ERC is just so easy.
Yeah,
it's easy. Also, it's just fits. I don't know, it's like I don't know. Make this comparison. It's like when Giancarlo Stanton was like, "Oh, I'm not Mike Stanton anymore. I'm Giancarlo Stanton." When that first happened, I'm like, "What's a Giancarlo like?" The name's Mike. And then
it's funny because that did kind of stick. Yeah. Like I didn't think that was going to stick, that people were going to actually call him Giancarlo, but it did. I mean, maybe it's just because he's really scary and he's so massive. Like, I don't think you would want to get on his bad side. He's kind of surly to begin with anyway. So
no, but it's I bring that up because it's funny, because I was thinking, in the NFL, Robbie Anderson, he changed his name to Chosen Anderson. But then, like, a couple months later, he said, no, it's not Chosen Anderson. It's now Robbie Chosen.
Yeah.
And it's like, so now I just call him Robbie Chosen Anderson Chosen.
Yeah. It's like the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. It's like
that. Yeah. Nice city. The Los Angeles. It's like Los Angeles of Anaheim. Nice city.
Yeah.
But that was interesting because I saw that. I'm like, is he going by Elmer Rodriguez? Yeah. Or is just Elmer Rodriguez? Noah Dean had a nice little outing.
Noah Dean, that's someone we talked about last week with, we were saying how like, oh, he, I feel like we brought him up a bunch last year where it would be like, cause he would struggle. And then one week he would have a start where he went like 5 shutout innings, 1 walk, 7 strikeouts. And we were like, oh, is this the Noah Dean turning point? And then the next week he'd have like 5 walks again. So this was just, 4 shutout innings. Didn't allow a hit, only walked 2, struck out 6. Just about the best start you could ask for him to start the season. I'm really hoping that when we come back here next week, we're talk about how he built off that. But it really looked like a different Noah Dean. I'm hoping that he worked some things out. Obviously, they tried to turn him into a starter, and that kind of maybe is what caused some of the control issues, but they're sticking with him as a starter, and it seems like things are correcting themselves a little bit. So that was just about as positive of a start as you could get from him to start the year.
Yeah. Sorry, Derek. So on Dean, like, it's fascinating to me that he is like a starter. Like, cause if you look at how they're doing things in Salem, cause we've talked about this, they're doing 6-man rotations for all of the teams from Double A on down. They're definitely doing this in Salem. It's really interesting to see all of these guys that have been stretched out and how they're using them, and how, like, it's interesting who's getting starts. Like, I would not have thought that Noah Dean would be one of the guys that would actually be like starting these games, but he has. And, you know, ERC has started, and Jackson Baez has, and, you know, got, but then guys like, you know, Max Carlson comes out of the bullpen. Ehrlicher came out of the bullpen, like these other guys. And it's like, it's just interesting to me, the decisions. And one thing, I guess I'd like to try to figure this out, maybe if we have somebody on the Salem staff on our show or something like that, is how are those guys, I'm interested to know how those guys that are coming out of the bullpen, how are they preparing? Are they like going through the whole entire like starter routine for, and then they come into the game in the fifth inning or whatever? Or are they really just being treated more like they're just like bullpen, like they're going to get up and warm up? Like, I'm just really fascinated to understand that, because it's like they do have all of these guys that are stretched out to be starters. And, you know, so Max Carlson to me is like one of the more interesting guys. He had a great outing. He had 8 strikeouts in 3 1/3 innings, just 1 walk. No hits. Yeah. Allowed, like, definitely a name to watch, because this was a guy who was a very highly touted prospect out of high school. And then he went to UNC and was very up and down in his career. If he had been able to come out after his sophomore year, he probably would have been a pick in probably the first 5 rounds or something like that, just because he put together a really good sophomore season. And then his junior year, he was not good. Like, it was pretty lousy. So the timing was bad for him. And so the Red Sox ended up getting him in the 12th round last year.
Good timing for the Red Sox.
Good timing for the Red Sox to be able to get him at that lower bonus. And I think that there's something there. I mean, a guy doesn't just forget how to pitch after being, you know, a top high school, you know, prep arm. And then I guess I have to mention just that Trenor O'Donnell was activated. Zach Fogle was one of the first promotions within the minor league system this year, moving up from low A to high A. And so Trenor O'Donnell was activated. There is no relation, as I mentioned on Twitter.
I don't believe you.
Well, I don't believe you. I am the tallest person
that ever live on either side of my family, and I think I know what that T stands for. I'm 5'10".
Jake Trenor O'Donnell. I can see it.
Trenor O'Donnell is 6'7". I promise you that nobody in my bloodline could even sniff 6 feet. So there's no way that we are related. But he was activated and he had two shutout innings out of the bullpen. But I will always support any O'Donnells that play baseball. That's for sure.
To change your name on Twitter to Jake Trenor O'Donnell.
That would be might be a way to get him on the show. I don't know. But
the thing I was gonna add to on Noah Dean was he was a fifth round pick too. There's also that thing for the Red Sox. They took him in the fifth round. They clearly have faith in him because they took him in the fifth round. You don't take someone in the fifth round all nilly willy. So I think that's likely why they have him starting. Not just because, I mean, if they felt like he couldn't, but I think it shows they still have faith in him. Because like I said, you don't pick someone in the fifth round if you think they're bad. You pick them because you think they're going to be good. So I think there's also that. Also, Isaac Stevens, but he appeared in two games. He pitched five innings, so he also got two saves. He only allowed a hit in five innings, no runs. He had six strikeouts, just one walk. And then our Mr. 4 years in the DSL, Royman Blanco, pitched in two games, 4 2/3 innings, didn't give up any runs. I just bring him up because I think it's kind of crazy. He spent four. It's rare that a guy will spend 4 years in the DSL, especially as a reliever, and then he makes it stateside and now is an affiliated ball. So, I mean, congrats, good for him. But I think that's interesting because normally if you spend 4 years as a reliever in the DSL, normally I think that means you're probably not going to make it to the States. And if you do, you maybe play in the FCL or whatnot. And like, that's kind of it. The fact that he's into affiliated ball makes me, not that I'm saying that they think there's something there, but there's gotta be something, right? He's not there for no reason. So I think that's a name that I'm just kind of keeping an eye on like the back of my head, because like I said, you don't just play 4 years in the DSL and that as a reliever, and then they bring you over for no reason. So, you know, maybe he's one of them late bloomers. Maybe we saw it with like the Astros and how they signed like Framber Valdez when he was like older, and like Christian Javier and Jose Urquidy, they signed all those guys when they were older. Blanco, I think he's what, 22 or something like that. So he's 22. So maybe a little bit of a late bloomer, you know. I think that's just kind of something, I guess, interesting to watch, because like I said, 4 years in the DSL is a lot. So, and then he also didn't have the 2020 season either. So you could even argue 5 years because there was no 2020 season. So 5 years, four seasons. However you want to put it, if that makes sense. I don't know. I think that's it for high. Does anyone have anything else for low A before I move to high A?
No.
All right, cool. We're going to high A then. We're taking the trip a little bit further south from Salem into high A, as I remember my directions for once. In high A, we are going to focus, at least first, we're going to focus a little bit on the pitching side of things here. Because Connelly Early, I always forget there's an R. I always think it's Ely when I read it, but it's Connelly Early. He had his one start this week where he pitched five innings, only gave up three hits, just one earned, and had seven strikeouts to just one walk. We'll throw it back. We're going to Hunter first this time. What are your thoughts on Early start? And I would say his performance this year, but I don't know if he started another game this year.
He did.
I think he did, but I have the worst memory ever, so I wouldn't remember anyways.
Yeah, so far this year in two starts, he's gone nine combined innings, four hits, two walks, 13 strikeouts. He's only given up a run. I mean, he's been phenomenal, especially with some of the pitching struggles around him. We've seen, you know, Luis Perales hasn't been off to the best start. David Sandlin's only gotten one start. He got hit around in the third inning of his game. Hayden Mullins has been up and down. Early's really been like the one consistent dominant starter for them. There's a couple of relievers who have been absurd, but he's the guy that's getting them to the midpoint of a game with a lead or in a game. He's the one dominating for them. And we didn't really get to see him much last year. He only pitched two innings in single A. He was a fifth round pick, I believe, in 2023. So we didn't really get to see much of him last year. So the fact that they started him in high A, I think, shows a little bit. Obviously, as a college pitcher, they very easily could have just thought that single A wouldn't be much of a challenge for him. And they probably just threw him in there last year. I mean, he made one start, two innings. I think that was more of just like, it's the end of the year. Let's get you some affiliated ball work, and then we'll put you somewhere next year. But just the fact that he's already in high A and two games in, we're seeing this phenomenal pitching performance two games in a row. It's something we've talked about weekly at this point, is the stigma around the Red Sox from some media members of not having starting pitching prospects. So it's always fun to see someone make waves this quickly. And we're seeing the Red Sox kind of have a little bit more of an emphasis on starting pitching, I think. I mean, obviously there's like the prospects that got, that have gone through the system, like Wickelman Gonzalez, like Luis Perales, who have made a name for themselves over the years. But then like they traded for David Sandlin, and they didn't spend, you know, a first round pick on a pitcher last year, but there were a couple more earlier picks on pitchers last year. Like, again, early being a fifth round pick. So to see him come in and kind of justify that pick this quickly, obviously, you know, 11 innings into his minor league career, it's not like we can say, oh, this guy's clearly the next Pedro Martinez or anything, but just he's giving up weak contact. He's not walking people. He's striking people out. 131 pitches in 9 innings is solid. Obviously, like, that's not, it's not like he's getting overworked or anything. So we're seeing consistency, which I just think is such an important thing to see from a pitcher in, especially in the lower levels of the minors, just consistently going out there. And again, I know it's two starts, but it's what we have to work with right now. And we're seeing him both games go out there and limit the walks. I think he had 6 strikeouts in one game and 7 in the other. I might be wrong about that. But for some reason that's in my head. Yeah. Okay. He had 6 strikeouts and 1 walk in his first start, and then 7 strikeouts and 1 walk in his second start. So he's consistently going out there, striking people out, limiting walks, limiting hits, and putting Greenville in a position to win their games, which, what else can you ask for?
Yeah, it was great to see him, that this past outing, like, the, you know, he's in the fifth inning. It's clearly going to be his last inning. There's a guy on second base, and he, you know, he's facing a lefty hitter, but at the same time, like, he really, he put him away with this really nasty slider and, you know, walked off the mound. And that was it for his outing. I think what's interesting is that he, you know, looks like he's been throwing a slider, and it seems like it's been an effective pitch. I don't know that he had 7 whiffs in this last outing. I don't think it was all on the slider necessarily, but if you look at the Sox prospects scouting report for him, it doesn't mention anything about a slider. So it's possibly that it's a new pitch. It's possible that they have sort of morphed his curveball into a real actual slider. Either way, it is a really encouraging development that it seems like the Red Sox have a starter, somebody that seems like maybe he is going to be added to the list of guys who seem like they're, you know, decent starting pitching prospects that the Red Sox have. It's very early, no pun intended. And he, you know, I think there's a really high possibility that coming out of that conference and, you know, maybe he's too good for Greenville already. Maybe he needs to get challenged to Double A by the end of this year. And if he gets up to Double A, he, as long as Kyle Teal is still there, that's the guy that he threw to in college. So definitely an advantage there as well. So Connolly early, definitely name to watch in terms of starting pitching potential prospects that the Red Sox are developing.
Can we confirm that it's early and not eerily?
What is it with you and ears?
Yeah, I don't know.
Kidding. We need to have an intervention. What is
no, it? I don't. It's I can't. I just look at his name. Maybe it's because of how I wrote it down, where it's like there's too much of a space between the R and the L.
Well, they don't have the pronunciation on here because they just assume that it's the same word as the word that you say all the time every day. Early.
I never write down the word early though. I always forget how it looks when it's spelled out. I don't know. Maybe I don't know.
You should look at the dictionary earlier.
I don't have a dictionary, so that's I don't know. That's not something I have. The other thing, I guess I'm moving from early because you guys kind of touched on everything. Yeah. I do want to talk about Caleb Bolden because he pitched in three games, 3 2/3 innings for him. He also picked up a save. He only gave up one hit in those almost four innings. No runs and then 7 strikeouts with 3 walks. Looks like we're bringing more relievers, I guess, to the fun, I guess, in this sense. Obviously, last year we had the Portland Super Bullpen, that's a little bit kind of dispersed now. There's some guys in Portland, guys like Luis Guerrero in AAA now. But then you got a guy like a Caleb Bolden, who's now in High A. Maybe will we form the Portland Super Bullpen down the road this year? Hopefully, I think it would be fun to bring back the Portland Super Bullpen. Maybe that's the other T-shirt we'll make, the Portland Super Bullpen T-shirt. Maybe that'll be it, but I thought that was interesting. And then the other one was Jonathan Brand out of the pen because he had two games where he went 5 1/3 innings between the two. He had 5 strikeouts with no walks, and he only gave up 2 hits without giving up any runs. So it seems like Greenville's bullpen maybe has something there. Maybe they're cooking a little bit maybe with their bullpen. The other thing I did forget to mention with Greenville, which I would have mentioned earlier, they were 2-4 this week against Bowling Green, which is Tampa Bay's High A affiliate, which figures because it's the Rays. They find ways to win, I guess. That's all I have on the pitching side of things. I don't know if we want to move to the hitters.
Well, I was just going to say, like, I think that for the starting pitchers so far, the command has been a bit off for some of these guys. But I think there's stuff to like there. Like, you know, Dalton Rogers had 6 strikeouts in the start, but he also walked 5 guys. Perales had, you know, 4 strikeouts and no walks, but he gave up 7 hits and 5 earned runs and 2 homers in his start. So it's sort of like the opposite issue of Dalton Rogers, where Dalton Rogers was having trouble finding the plate, whereas it seemed like maybe Perales was finding too much of the plate. David Sandlin wasn't super sharp in his start this week either, but there's like other, like early looks great and their guys in the bullpen look great, but I think like there's some things to like about the starts for these other guys, but it's early. It is actually like timeline is early and on the season, and we'll see what those guys come up with. But yeah, I'll jump into the hitters just in the interest of time. Like I'll let you guys talk about like Brian Gonzalez, who had probably the best week. But I wanted to mention, cause I wasn't able to join the show last week, but my Christian Campbell narrative is looking great to start the year. And I actually have to say that he hasn't necessarily gotten off to the greatest start at the plate. He has 11 strikeouts in 25 at-bats so far. But he hit this past week one of the, like, longest, like most, like, high exit velocity home runs you will ever see in the minor leagues. And I think that speaks to the level of prospect that he is already and the changes that he's made, and that he's hit the ball harder, that he hit a home run that was 113 miles an hour off the bat and was 450 feet to dead center. Like, that doesn't happen by accident. Like, the strikeouts, he's going to have to figure that side of it out. But I would say everybody should get on the Christian Campbell train. And I would have mentioned these things last week if I had been on here, but basically he was like the number one highest riser in the Sox prospects update for the month of April. He went from like 47 to 22. He was mentioned by Baseball America in a piece that they wrote talking about him. He had a hit in, like, I think the first game. And then I will also mention this. I'm kind of paraphrasing, but on not the most recent Sox Prospects podcast, but the one before, Chris Hatfield was told by somebody in the Red Sox organization that they believed that Christian Campbell would be a top five Red Sox prospect by the end of this year. And the same person was the one that told them last year about Roman Anthony being a high riser. So everybody needs to get on the Christian Campbell bandwagon with me while my narrative continues to thrive.
Are you starting the Christian Campbell fan club?
No, the fan club can be yours. Like, that's, I'm not going to do fan club.
Well, you tried the Juan Chacon one last year.
I tried, but it didn't work out. He got hurt, and that's
clearly okay. The Jake fan clubs are cursed. So
I'm just saying it's a narrative. Like, it's my narrative about Christian Campbell being my breakout prospect for this year. So everybody wants to hop on. It's like a narrative train. Like, hop on the narrative train with me for Christian Campbell. But anyway.
Yeah. Brian, like you mentioned, Brian Gonzalez, known baseball destroyer. This was something he did last year, too. He hits baseballs very hard. And we're getting more of that this season. Same issues as last year, too. Struck out a ton last year. We talked about it a couple weeks ago where he had a ridiculous stretch of like 40 games or something absurd with at least one strikeout. He's already got 10 this year, but he's also hit three homers. Just demolishes baseballs. He even hit one opposite field, which that's good to see. But just a really interesting guy who, you know, outfielder, but can also play first base. And as long as I don't think he's ever going to be like this all around great prospect. I think he's always going to have some strikeout issues. I don't think he's going to be like the highest batting average type guy, but if he can build off the raw power that he clearly has and become someone that is a 30 home run threat, there's a very clear market for him. But the person I think who's going to benefit the most from being in Greenville this year is Luis Rovello. Getting out of the Salem ballpark, I think, is going to do wonders for him. And we're already seeing it this year. He's hitting 267, also has a 267 on base percentage, so maybe he needs to work on the walks a little bit. But he's slugging 600 because he has four doubles and two homers. I think he's someone that is going to break some windows in that apartment complex, the condos, whatever they are in Floor Field, the Greenville's ballpark. I think he's going to maybe make people need to get some new insurance, but just plays a phenomenal shortstop. He's already made a couple really good plays there this year. Switch hitter. And I legitimately think getting out of Salem is going to make his offensive numbers just absolutely skyrocket. We're again, four doubles, two homers. A lot of those probably would have been outs, especially those doubles probably would have just been outs in Salem. Now he's getting a bunch of, it's just, I wouldn't be shocked if he's someone that we're talking about in 2-3 months, whenever some potential call-ups start happening from Portland to Worcester, as someone that could be moving up to Portland. And I think by the end of the year, he's someone that could be flirting with 30 doubles, 30 plus doubles, and around 20 homers. I really think that we're going to see a massive jump for Luis Rovello in 2024.
I'm right on board with that. I actually wrote down on Luis Rovello. It's not exactly what I wrote down, but I'll kind of paraphrase that. Good defensive shortstop, who's a switch hitter. You always question switch hitters in terms of, do they have a stronger side? But moving to Greenville is going to help him offensively. And last year, he had an 11.5% walk rate in Salem. This year, he hasn't drawn any walks. But overall, if he can draw about 10%, have about a 10% walk rate or just above that, with the increased offensive output that Greenville should give him, he has a very good chance to, I don't want to say shock people necessarily. I don't know if that's the right way of putting it, but I think that's a very good chance of being a pleasant surprise to some who aren't following him as closely. Because defensively, he can play shortstop. He's not like, there isn't really a worry there for me with him defensively at short, as there might be with, like, I guess, like a David Hamilton, for example. I'm not like really right now questioning, oh, is Luis Rovello going to have to play somewhere else? But overall with Ravello too, I think the other thing that we have to remember, like, and you did bring it up, Hunter, he was in Salem last year. That place hates hitters. And last year he had 15 doubles and 6 homers over the entire season. This year already the 4 doubles, 2 homers already this year. So he's already a third of the way to his home run total from last year, and he's almost a third of the way to his doubles total from last year as well. Overall, I think, like, big picture, I think if you're looking at anyone in high A, because this is a high A team that, you know, they're kind of in the middle. They don't have, like, the big three or anyone like that because they've all moved up to double A, and they don't have, like, the Miguel Blaise yet. And when you look at the roster, and we talked about it a little bit, you have Alan Castro had a very good year, and you have, like, your – but then you have, like, your group of, like, your Christian Campbells, your Luis Ravello can kind of go into the group. Guys like a Carter Coffey maybe who aren't the highest-ranked prospects ever, but – like, you could see a bunch of them having good years and show, and, you know, see them finishing the year in double A, and it's like, oh no, this guy's like a legit prospect. He's not just like a, I don't want to say not like he's not a maybe, because, like, they're not maybes, but what I mean, and more so, like, I don't know how the right way to explain it would be, but, or maybe people would be more sure on them. Maybe that's the way to explain it. I'm not 100% sure, but I could see them, like, guys like Ravello, like Campbell, like even Cutter Coffee. I know he didn't have the greatest week this week, but I could see them having good years and really, you know, shooting up like Red Sox prospect rankings, and heck, maybe even further. Depends on how good of years they have. And I think the high A team's probably going to be like the sneaky team of the minor leagues, in a way of like they're not going to be as good on paper as like a Portland or maybe even Salem when you look at prospect rankings necessarily, in terms of at least position player wise. But because they don't have like that top 10 guy or whatnot in the system. But I think overall they're going to have guys who put up good seasons and are going to place themselves in a really good position heading into 2024, heading into 2025, whether it's starting 2025 in double A or getting a taste of double A late in the season or whatnot. I think there's definitely a chance of that. So I think the high A team, I'm excited to see what's going to come for a very sizable chunk of that roster.
I think we should
probably we'll do
Worcester for a minute. Well, this is the Worcester minute. This is last year. Just because it's, you know, we talked about this before that we came on. It's like Worcester, there just wasn't a lot to talk about this week.
Yeah.
Rob Refsnyder and Vaughn Grissom started their rehab assignment, so that's something. Most of the guys
2-4 against Syracuse. Yeah,
they had, you know, like guys like Mark Contreras and Eddie Alvarez had good weeks. I think probably the most notable thing were the starts. There were some good starts or some interesting starts this week for Dick Fitz. Had a decent start. You know, as he's kind of trying to get going, 5 innings pitched, 3 earned runs, 5 strikeouts, gave up a home run. Grant Gambrill was pretty good. And then I didn't write down his first name, so I don't
know. Naoyuki
Uesawa had his debut, and he was pretty good. Did give up a home run, 3 earned runs, but he had 5 strikeouts and 5 innings pitched. And
that's also a quadruple A team, the Mets.
Right. Because they have a lot of guys. Because Uesawa's on the 40 man and the Red Sox, I'm assuming that the Red Sox will need him at some point. So yeah. It was good to see. But yeah.
Yeah. Also Zach Kelly. A good couple innings out of the bullpen.
Jorge Benitez looked good. So.
Luis Guerrero, there's a couple good relievers there. As for hitting, I mean, Nathan Hickey hit a homer. Nico Cavadas hit a homer. Tyler McDonough got called up, went 2-for-4. That was nice.
Nick Sogard hit a homer, had a couple doubles. Same thing with Eddie Alvarez. You know,
Chase Mydrouth's hitting. He's 5-for-30, but he's drawn 11 walks compared to 5 strikeouts. So. In typical Chase Meadrow fashion, he has a 400 on base percentage. He's going to get on base and get your runs. So even when he's struggling, his on base percentage is going to be better than anyone else's on the team.
And kids, that's why you take your walks.
Take
your walks. Take what the pitcher gives you. And if it's a free base, it's a free base.
There you go.
You take it. I'll just say this in terms of the entire organization. That's also why you want to not allow walks when you're pitching. Don't give guys free bases either. I think that's that's obvious, but like it can't be stated enough. Mm-hmm. And because when we talk about guys like, for example, like Luis Perales or Wilkerman Gonzalez, and they're going to put up good strikeout numbers, but like big things with guys like that are don't walk guys. And then with hitters, and we're kind of seeing it a little bit in the big leagues with the Seidan Rafaela, it's, you know, doesn't draw a ton of walks. It's swing decisions with him. And I'm not saying it, you can't, you can still be successful as a pitcher, even if you walk more guys than you probably should, or even if you don't draw enough walks to the plate, you can still be successful, but
you're making it harder on yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, and I think something that's, I would assume that's something the Red Sox organization is focusing on. It seems like it is. And I'll just quickly, in terms of you look at the top prospects, you got guys like Anthony Meyer, Teal, you know, bring up Alan Castro because he drew 5 walks in 1 game last week. Like, it seems like Mydrop's another one. Like, they're drawing walks. We're not having guys who hit 300 with a 302 on base percentage. Like, which is fun to see because, you know, that's how you make pitchers pay. And I think we always, and I think that's the one thing that you don't just lose, even if you're like, even if you're struggling, or you get a guy gets called up to the big leagues, maybe they're struggling with the bat, but you don't lose the eye at the plate. You don't use your plate discipline. You still at least have an ability to draw walks, still get on base, still do something, still bring value. So I think that's also why it's important, especially on the hitting side, being able to draw walks. So I think that's another thing that I like to see in terms of like a Mydroth, for example. So I think that's important to bring up because I think sometimes you forget how valuable just drawing a walk can be, even because it's, oh, he didn't get a hit, but like it's better than striking out, better than flying out to the center fielder, you know. In terms of the result, I obviously, like, if you fly out and it's like you smash the baseball, it goes right to someone, that's a little bit different, but it's better than like a lazy fly ball or a pop up or whatnot, right? And that's kind of a thing like that you can kind of measure in some sense in terms of walks. Obviously, sometimes you get walks not necessarily created equally, because if a pitcher throws 4 balls in the dirt, you know, it counts the same as a really great 10 pitch at bat where you take a couple close pitches and you have a really good eye. So they're not all created equally, but I think you can see, like, with Mydrop having 11 walks already, that's not, you know, he's not getting lucky with his walks, you know. So I think that should be noted. Are we ready to move to Guess the Prospect?
Yes, let's do it.
All right, here we go. Guess the Prospect. We have 12 hints this time, although I'm not expecting the last two are kind of dead giveaway hints, so I'm hoping I don't have to use them. But I've changed up the order this time. I don't want to kind of do the same order. Kind of shuffled the hints around a little bit.
All right.
So we're going to start with the first one. This player is listed at 6'3" and 150 pounds on Sox Prospects.
Put some food in him.
Yeah, that's kind of that's skinny for 6'3", but hey.
Yeah, 6'3", 150. So it's not Nico Cavadas.
I think I know the position.
This player's birthday is October 9th. This player was acquired by the Red Sox organization in 2022. This player received a signing bonus of $400,000. This player was born in La Romana, in the city of La Romana in the Dominican Republic. This player's signing team as an international amateur free agent was the Boston Red Sox. This player was born in 2004 and they are 19 years old.
Is it Yoel Cespedes? No.
Nope.
No, I don't think that's his build.
6'3", 150.
Yeah, that's a real wild.
I can't get over that.
That's why I put it first.
I have another guess, but I'll wait till the next.
This player bats and throws left-handed.
Oh. Is it Nathaniel Uten?
It is.
Damn it, Hunter. Speak up. Use your words, Hunter.
Use your words. All right.
That was the only name I could think of that was.
The 6'3", 150 was wild. I saw that.
I didn't realize he's that slender.
I think that's what threw me off is I heard it and I was like, well, it's got to be a pitcher, right? Those guys are always grossly skinny. Yeah.
No, the next hint the last two like regular hints were that he made his U.S. debut in 2023 and then is listed as an outfielder on Sox Prospects. The giveaway hints were that he's currently in low A and then number 51 on the Sox Prospects top 60. I figured that's like a – at this point, if you don't have it, the only other thing I have is to give what his ranking is and whatnot. But, yes, it wasn't telling you. So, what, Jake's up, what, 2-0 now, is it?
Yeah.
I think so.
Yep. Yes, Jake is up 2-0.
Put another on the board.
Yeah. Put another – I tally mark next to Jake's name. Yep. So Jake is up 2-0. We will continue Guess the Prospect next week, as well as all our coverage of the Red Sox minor leagues. So with that, for Jake and for Hunter, my name is Derek. Thanks for tuning in to the Pesky Report, and we'll see you next time.